¿Quieres mejor internet? Cox Internet de 300 megas tiene las velocidades rápidas y confiables que buscas. Perfecto para streaming y gaming y trabajar desde casa. Yeah. Todo por solo $45 al mes cuando agregas Cox Mobile. Incluye equipo de Wi-Fi y garantía de precio de 2 años en tu plan. Yeah. No esperes. Cámbiate hoy a Cox. Requiere Cox Mobile Gig Unlimited. Garantía de precio no incluye impuestos y cargos. Velocidad de datos móviles se reduce después de 20 gigas al mes.
Hey guys.
Hello.
Hi, Colin and Mito.
Hi.
And for our listeners, welcome back to Undisclosed Unfiltered. This is our weekly episode where we kind of talk about things in the news that we want to talk about, whether it's true crime or law related. And we get to have our longtime executive producer, Methel, on with us, finally bringing her to the front of the microphone. And Methel, people love hearing from you.
I'm relieved, but I'm still stressed.
I know. It's been stressful. You'll get over it. And in a few months, you'll be like, I'll can do this in my sleep. I like your hoodie, by the way.
Thank you very much. It's very
comfy. It looks like undisclosed merch. Yes.
That's right.
Talk to my lawyer. Snazzy. All right. We have a tight 45 minutes, so we got to wrap this up in today. So if there are questions and comments, and we'll probably get to it next week, but don't worry, we are keeping an eye on it. I also posted earlier in our Facebook group. We have a little community group. You should find us and join it. You know, to ask suggestions from people for stories they wanted us to cover. So feel free also to share your thoughts through our DMs, Instagram, however you want to communicate with us if you have ideas for stories you want us to cover. But we're going to get right into it this week. And we are going to start off with Colin. Colin, what do you want to talk to us about today?
All right. So to set this up, we have a married couple, Charlotte and Lucy Campbell, and in their home, they're making pornography and they're posting it on social media. And so there's this guy, Giorgio Montser. He comes across these pornographic videos on the internet, and he thinks this is violating federal law, distributing obscene materials in interstate commerce, and he decides, I'm going to do a citizen's arrest.
Oh.
And so he gets a taser, handcuffs, duct tape, pepper spray. He pretends to be a pizza delivery worker. And he arrives at the home of these two women.
Wait, okay. I'm sorry. Colin, is he like a neighbor? How does he know where these people live?
He looks it up online. So he's not a neighbor. He just takes it upon himself. I'm going to arrest these two women who are making these pornographic videos and posting them. So he goes a first time, doesn't go well. Second time, doesn't go well. He goes a third time.
What does doesn't go well mean?
Seriously.
I want you to elaborate.
The third time.
Can't make the arrest.
Charlotte has a gun. There's wrestling over the gun. The gun goes off. No one is hurt, but eventually this guy is arrested and he's charged with various crimes. And the question is, was he conducting a valid citizen's arrest? And under Nevada law, which is where this takes place, Supreme Court of Nevada says, no, he can't claim citizen's arrest. You can only claim that for felonies committed in your presence. Okay. Avenue into the bigger issue, which is, what do we think about citizens' arrests? Of course, a few years ago, the Ahmaud Arbery case in Georgia, the young man who they thought was burglarizing this home in construction, they pulled up with the trucks, they're aggressive, and there's this, you know, fatal incident. And if we go back to the history of citizens' arrests, actually a former South Carolina law student did an article on this. At least in Georgia and South Carolina, it originates with these patrols during slave times.
Right.
Trying to prevent slave uprisings and bring slaves back to their owners. So it has a tortured history. But if we're talking about 2026 now, right, someone sees someone violently attack someone in public, they're running away. Should they have that power to do a citizen's arrest? And there's two variations. In Nevada, the reason why Mr. Serra couldn't claim citizen's arrest is it wasn't a felony committed in his presence. In the Ahmaud Arbery case, in Georgia, you can do a citizen's arrest if it's in your presence or in your immediate knowledge, you know they have committed this felony, right? So pros are you can apprehend a person who might be escaping. You might prevent future harm they're going to commit if you're doing a citizen's arrest. The cons are often it targets people of color and you are sort of deputizing citizens to make these decisions that they're not really trained to do. So Methel and Rabia, Should we scrap citizens' arrests altogether? What do you think about the immediate knowledge versus immediate presence rules for citizens' arrests?
I mean, okay, immediate presence, I kind of understand, right? You, it's something that's happened right in front of you. Immediate knowledge, I reject. I mean, because what knowledge did those perps had who, like, killed Ahmaud Arbery? Like, right. What knowledge? You know, they might be saying, we're acting on knowledge. What is your knowledge? Is this some bias? And the guy's, like, jogging through the neighborhood. So I don't know what the parameters of that knowledge is. Like, how does somebody have knowledge? The idea, I mean, also, yeah, I mean, like, it just seems like there's just no real defined way to have knowledge unless it's happening in front of you. I feel like that's the as far as it should go. But also, that seems also kind of not sketchy, but, like, not safe. You know, not a safe thing to do. I'm imagining, I mean, like, in this case that you just presented, that somebody could have ended up dead. More than one person could have ended up dead.
Right.
Like, how this can go. Also, how does the average citizen know whether something is a crime or not a crime? Like, how does this guy even know that what these women are doing are they even committing a crime? I'm guessing they were not committing crimes. I don't know. So we're assuming that the average citizen is going to be able to identify a crime as it's happening. Like, I don't know. You don't know if that person coming out of the house had a key to that house, has been asked by the homeowner to watch the house while they're gone. I'm like, you know, I'm just imagining a scenario. What is a crime? And I don't know. But I don't know. I don't know. What do you think, Mito?
It
feels risky.
I agree 100%. I mean, I think there are too many variables. There's too much gray area. There's too much, I think I have this knowledge, but it could be false knowledge, you know, to your point. It's too questionable. And I do agree, Robbie, if something is happening in front of me, that's different. That's pretty factual compared to, like, I heard something or I thought I read something that may or may not be true. But for me to just go in guns blazing, like, oh, I'm gonna do this, you know, like, that's not safe.
And then the potential for vigilantism in something like this.
Of course.
Like, you suspect, I mean, you guys remember what was that pizza parlor that a bunch of people thought had, like, a pedophile ring in the basement?
Yeah.
And it's like, it just allows people who should not have the power to be arresting anybody to, like, target people they don't like for different reasons and finding a way and finding a reason to come after them.
Yeah.
Where are you at, Colin, on this?
Well, I think we're all on the same page. I think we're all out on immediate knowledge, right? If you just think you know that this happens, that's not valid grounds. What about, you know, you're on Main Street, you see a little old lady or a little old man attacked, and the person's running away. Should you be able to tackle that person, say, I'm making a citizen's arrest, tell people, call the cops and restrain that person while the cops are coming? Is that
But what is the benefit of making the citizens arrest versus just tackling them and restraining them until law enforcement gets there?
Yeah, I mean, that's what it would be. It would be the power to do that, you know. Even though they're not attacking me, even though they're running away from the victim, I have the authority to restrain them. Whether I say citizens arrest or not, should I have that power to do that, to restrain them for the 30 minutes or the 15 minutes it takes for 911 to have the dispatch come? Or are we still opening up too big of a can of worms here?
Yeah, I mean, I could think I just saw something happen and they attacked, you know, this old couple. But maybe they didn't. Maybe they are running away from something else or out for a jog. Like, it's still questionable. But it's still
for the record, I think it's too dangerous. And I think the people targeted is, you know, disproportionately people of color. And this creates issues going back to the historical origin. So, yeah, I'm out on it. I think no citizen's arrest should exist. No power.
So even in this scenario where you clearly saw somebody assault somebody and run, you think a bystander should not be able to detain that person?
I think there are good cases like that one that we just went through, but it opens up the door to too many bad cases. And so I think there are legitimate uses, but there's enough bad there that I think this should not be a power we grant to citizens.
Oh, wow.
I mean, because the other thing is, like, if I go to tackle somebody, like, I could end up getting hurt anyways, right? So then that person could end up running away and I could be dead. Like, who knows?
But that's,
like,
your risk, right?
Anything, anything could happen.
And if I can claim self-defense or defense of others, right? If this is an active threat to me or someone else, I can restrain them. This is, they've attacked someone, they're running away. They're not, in the moment, a threat to mirror that victim.
Right,
that's the situation we're dealing with. Yeah.
Right. Gosh, I don't know. Colin, you're making me think about things that I really haven't ever thought about. Citizens arrest. I mean, I guess it's something that's so rarely invoked. It feels like, you know, mm-hmm. you don't see it a lot unless it's happening and we're just not seeing it. But I feel like it's not something people are like out looking. But I can see how dangerous it can be if you do have groups of people, especially in the climate we're in right now. Yeah. Lethal, you were about to say something.
I was just going to say, it just seems like two different things. One, it depends on what the crime is, right? Because I might be like, oh, I'm not even getting near this. Them posting porn, like, what does that have to do with you? There are other ways that you could have gone about this, buddy.
What about my neighbor's tax evasion, you know, that I might know about?
Yeah, like, that's questionable. But also, it's not like we're in, and I suppose it depends on the location, right? But generally speaking, it's not like you don't have police or security around to where we have to be the ones to do this, right? You can make a phone call and you can call somebody and have the ones who are trained to do this handle the situation instead of, again, trying to go in guns blazing.
And we've all got the smartphone. So if at a minimum, like, you know, you can always like take a video of the person, or you know what I mean? Have another way to provide some evidence to law enforcement.
Gather information.
But Colin, let me ask you this. Is it enough, do you think, the fact that this is kind of like fruit of the rotten tree? I don't know what the right analogy, but you know, like the origin of this is so problematic. Is that enough? I feel like that would be so many of our laws, but is it enough, right? Is it enough for us to kind of be like, we need to abolish this law just because the origin of it is really problematic?
I mean, this is the whole controversy over the 1619 project, right? Where the 1619 project is so much of our law, and there's debates about extent and all that, fair enough, but how much of our law overall is based on this? So I think if we were to scrap everything that had some origins that are problematic, we wouldn't have a lot of law left. So, you know, I think it certainly is a reason to put this under the microscope, but I don't know that automatically that means we should get rid of it.
Get rid of it. Okay. Well, so what's going on in that case now?
So the Supreme Court of Nevada recently had their opinion saying, no, Mr. Sir cannot claim citizen's arrest because it was not in his presence. And under Nevada law, it had to be in his presence, among other things.
Were those women breaking the law?
I mean, I don't know the internet pornography laws. I mean, there's probably people who know that better than I do. I don't know how that works.
I feel like OnlyFans is what sustains half the country at this point, whether as consumers or content creators. So I don't know. But all right, that's really interesting. Food for thought. Love to hear what our listeners will have to say about that one. Mitha, I'm going to popcorn it over to you. What do you want to talk about this week?
So I want to talk about a news story that I came across last week, and it's related to something called swatting. That's a new term for me. Do you guys know about what swatting is? You do?
Yes,
I do.
So, I don't think I've heard of it.
Colin, you haven't heard of swatting
That's
before?
Crazy.
It's a terrifying practice. All right, go ahead, Mitha. Explain to folks.
I get to teach Colin something.
Yeah, for once.
Oh, I think we actually had, I think we had this at our college, actually. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, let's see.
I hadn't heard the term in particular. But okay.
Got it. So this story actually takes place across oceans. Back in October, the FBI here alerted the AFP, which is the Australian Federal Police, about one of their citizens who'd been calling emergency services and reporting active mass shootings at like stores and, you know, educational institutions, not in Australia, but here across the US.
Ooh.
Multiple calls were made. And in some cases, you know, you could hear gunfire in the background. Well, after conducting their investigation, the AFP was able to locate and execute a search warrant at a house in New South Wales, where they recovered multiple electronic devices and seized a prohibited firearm. They also identified the citizen as a 13-year-old Australian boy.
Oh, God. I think I remember this. Yeah.
Yeah. Swatting is where you make false emergency calls just to trick law enforcement, you know, into sending a large, you know, heavily armed response to whatever location. But in this case, obviously, there's not a real emergency and it's just a hoax. So just like a lot of the other things that we've talked about, you know, Robbie, you brought up sextortion. It's people just hiding behind their cameras, you know, committing these crimes. And it's typically perpetrated by young boys who are trying to, you know, get notoriety and status, but in this online community. Mm-hmm. So what ends up happening is this 13-year-old is subsequently charged, 13 charges against him, 12 that are related to his use of the telecom network, and then one related to the firearm. Last Tuesday, he had a court date and he pleaded not guilty to all the charges. You know, we'll see what comes of it, but you know, his parents just thought he was gaming. Like a lot of us just think that our kids are gaming. So between the FBI and the AFP, there's obviously encouraging parents to continue to know what your kids are doing, you know, monitor their activity and, I don't know, connect with them, maybe have conversations with them and don't let them just hide behind their screens and stuff. But I don't know. It's like every other conversation that we have about like online communities that are doing this kind of stuff, right? What kind of laws can we put in place? What kind of, you know, procedures or policies can we invoke to keep this from happening in different circles? Whether it's this extortion thing, whether it's this swatting term or whatever. But I just thought that was interesting because, again, we're just talking about teenagers, young kids that are doing these things. And, you know, if he ends up being charged, and I mean, not sorry, if he ends up, you know, being found guilty, he's going to get up to 5 years for the 12 charges and then up to 14 for the firearm. That's crazy.
I mean, I can't believe that this kid, well, I mean, I can believe it, especially given the story I'm about to tell a little bit, was sophisticated enough because I'm assuming this child knew how to, like, use VPNs, used all kinds of ways to bypass, like, you know, detection and being traced and all that stuff. So was that sophisticated, number one? Number two, did he have a political agenda? Were there certain kinds of groups he's are targeting? Like, who is he getting swatted? Because think about swatting, because I did not know where this conversation or where your story was going to go. But, you know, swatting is like people have just as a out of personal revenge swatted others, right? Like, and people have ended up getting hurt from that. I believe people have even ended up being killed, but sending on purpose, like a SWAT team somewhere by reporting a dangerous situation, like a hostage situation and stuff like that. We've heard of that happening before. So, but that's usually in a situation where somebody's trying to get at somebody.
Yeah. In this case, there's nothing like that. I mean, he just chose random places. There was a Walmart, you know, there are schools and thankfully no one was hurt. And I mean, besides obviously the panic and the trauma and all that and any financial implications to the businesses and the retailers. But no, so far, at least in what they've put out, there's not anything to suggest anything political or specific about why or who, because it just seems at random because it's across the nation. It's not even certain states or cities.
I was going to say, I didn't know the term, but August of last year at University of South Carolina, we had a swatting incident where they said there's this active shooter. And across social media and the local news, there was images of this student they thought was the shooter.
Oh, my God.
And it turned out to be false alarm. But like this kid, this college kid could have been hurt.
Could have been killed.
The resources diverted from other criminal investigations. Obviously, a school shooting, huge. And so like you can have collateral consequences. I mean, this
were they able to. Were they able to determine who, like, made that false call?
I'm not sure. Yeah, it's. Yeah. I just remember when this happened. And, you know, the community is in a panic and all that. But, and this certainly is something that's serious.
I mean, I'm hoping that SWAT teams have specific training that would help prevent, you know, in order to detect when this is, like, not a false alarm. But, you know, the question of, like, you know, monitoring your kids. Look, I know just even on my teenage daughter's phone, if there are apps she doesn't want me to see, I'll never find them. I will not know. I cannot as a 51-year-old mom keep up with the technology my kids are using. It's just impossible.
And it's by design.
That's by design. Right. And so the question is, do we just not let them use it? Until when? Until they're 18? And then it's like, okay, well, you're on your own. I don't know. Like I feel like there's just no way to really monitor it. But I do think, I mean, I don't know what this kid's situation was like I do think a lot of this kind of stuff happens when you've got kids who are just disappear for hours and hours, like in your basement or in the rooms, and you have no idea. It's what, like, what was that show that you, it was Adolescent, right?
Adolescence, yeah.
Right,
Adolescence.
Right, that kind of thing. So I think when you have that, that's maybe a red flag for a parent to be like, what are you doing online for 6 hours a day? Maybe.
Right.
Yeah.
But in that case, I mean, maybe they ask, they're, oh, nothing. I'm just playing with, I'm playing video games with my friends. Oh, okay. Have fun. And then that's it. You leave.
You do. I don't know. I don't know what the answer to that is. But this, you know, I'm guessing, but they're not, the U.S. is not trying to extradite this kid, are they? Okay. Because if they did, he'd probably get it worse over here.
Yeah.
I'm guessing. Well, I'm hoping nobody was hurt in any of these incidences.
No, thankfully nobody was hurt.
One more reason for parents to be terrified. And, you know, I actually have not heard, this might be one of the first times I've heard of an actual kid like doing something like this. I have heard of other incidences, like with you know some racist guy or woman, sure, who wants to, like, you know, hurt a family of color or something like that, or an institution of color.
I guess looking here in South Carolina, yeah, it was an online teen crime group that did our swatting here.
Oh,
so I don't,
God,
know exactly what that is, but yeah, that's
online teen crime group.
Teens don't need to have access to all this, not this young. And they're smart, right? I mean, obviously they're smart, and so that's great. Use it for something else. Like, let's channel that.
You know, we talk about this, and you know what my 8-year-old said to me last night? Mm-hmm. He said, Mama, I want to become a content creator. Can I become a content creator? I'm like, what? Do you even know what that means? I was like, you got to go to school and have a real life. But, like, that's how this all be. I feel like, you know what I mean? They just, because they consume it, they want to be online. Once they're online, then I feel like there's very little control. I just feel like that angry old man standing on my porch saying, get off my lawn. And the story that I'm about to present ties in the same way to this only because of my absolute incomprehension of this entire world. All right, I'm going to take you. This is a wild ride. We got about 20 minutes left. I don't know how long it's going to take me, but it's a whole story that goes back over 20 years, but it is wild. Okay, so I need y'all to hear this. And it's an active ongoing case in Maryland and I think across, and in different states in the U.S. Have you guys heard of the Zizians?
No.
No.
All right, I'm going to teach you about the Zizians, but we're going to start back in 2003. Okay, 2003. There was an online community that was called Less Wrong. It was founded by a community. It was supposed to be a community of rationalists, like these kind of like brilliant young philosopher types who used this rationalist theory to kind of make decisions on things and think about things and have debates on these really, you know, esoteric topics and sometimes not so esoteric, like whether it was okay to farm shrimp or not. This community was founded by a man named Eliezer Yudkowsky, okay, this brilliant guy. And he decided to found this community for a couple of reasons. He recognized back in 2003 that AI, he believed, was going to destroy the human race eventually. He's like, what I need to do is come up with a plan to bring together like brilliant, like-minded people to help stop the destruction of humanity. I mean, this is not a made-up story. This is for real, you know, because of AI. Now, this guy, he had actually dropped out of school in eighth grade, but he read a lot of science fiction. He was captivated by the idea of the singularity. Now, I've heard this in science fiction movies, but I didn't ever actually know what it was until the story. The singularity refers to this future where artificial intelligence surpasses human intelligence, and it causes unpredictable, rapid, and uncontrollable technological growth, which I feel like we're kind of on that train right now. All right. By the time he's 21, he has founded this nonprofit called the Singularity Institute for Artificial Intelligence. He is the only employee, and he is not only scared of what AI is going to do to humanity, but he also wants to build. He wants to be the one who builds the very first superintelligence machine himself. But then as he gets deeper and deeper into it, suddenly he recognizes how many ways AI can go wrong. And he's like, no. I don't want to do this anymore. What I want to do is work on AI alignment, where meaning that we develop AI in a way that we can control it and it serves humanity versus destroying it. So he's like, he still needs a team of people to help him do this. So he starts writing and he has a series of writings that become kind of like, you know, like what's it called? These are, it's like the central literature for these groups, right? And it drives all these young minds to him. And these people read his writings on his website. And as people are coming to his theories and philosophy, you know, he's recognizing them. He's like, okay, I'm gonna, he starts two volunteer organizations again to keep recruiting people. The first is MIRI, which is called the Machine Intelligence Research Institute. And that's devoted to developing friendly AI. And the other one is called CFAR, the Center for Applied Rationality, which is devoted to the broader goal of helping people become more rational, just so that they can take the threat of artificial intelligence more seriously. Okay, now these two organizations draw people from across the country and even across the world. Two of those people are women. They're both trans women, one by the name of Ziz Lasota and the other one, Gwen Danielson. Okay, both were school dropouts, but they were brilliant people. They were very disillusioned by like the tech sector and corporate life. Anyhow, in 2016, they get to the Bay Area and this entire community, like a real life community, had grown up and you know, become a thing around these two organizations. And, you know, Danielson had a boat. And so Lasota moved onto the boat and these women lived together. They were also like these militant vegans. And the weird intersection of militant veganism in the story is crazy. Now, they both tried to get involved with these groups, but they both felt that CFAR discriminated against them on the basis of their gender identity, because every time they tried to sign up for something, they were told the slots were full. So they were like, I guess these were organizations that also people donated to. They were nonprofits, and they both had heavily donated to these organizations. They had an annual gathering every year of the rationalists. And in November 2019, there was going to be a big gathering, and they decided, along with a couple of other people, two other trans women, Somni Leetham and Emma Borhanian, they decided, we at these gatherings are going to give these talks. They're, you know, people are allowed to present panels and stuff, but they were prevented from presenting their panels because they were going to criticize these organizations for how they were treating trans members, but also for the fact that they had settled settled with somebody who had brought some sexual assault charges against one of the people involved, and they folks and did not know that they had quietly paid out the settlement. They were angry about that. Anyhow, the organizations are like, nope, you cannot present on this. So they're like, all right, you know what? We're going to stage a protest. All right. So these four women, they dressed up kind of like, you know, like in these long gowns and masks, and they parked their cars all around the vicinity so that people, like, to block people. And, you know, they started a protest, and they wouldn't speak to the staff folks. They called the sheriff's office. They said one of these people might have a gun, kind of a SWAT situation. But nobody had a gun. A bomb squad was called in, the SWAT team comes, there's a police helicopter, like the whole thing just, you know, yeah, it gets crazy. Lasota and Danielson are wrestled to the ground. They're both screaming they're being sexually assaulted by police officers as is doing it, but there's no evidence to that. Now, the protest is broken up. They're not arrested for that. But afterwards, Lasota, Ziz, this is it. Now, the word Zizian comes from this woman's name, Ziz. And it's not something that Ziz herself coined, but there was a website called the Zizians that started documenting everything that this group was doing and these particular people are doing and you know, calling them out. She sends an email with two accusations. One, that Yudkowsky, remember, was the guy who originally founded this group, Less Wrong, that he had committed sexual assault against an underage person, which was an unfounded claim. And the second accusation was actually a very uncomfortable truth. And that is that Yudkowsky was single-handedly responsible for actually starting the AI arms race. Even though Yudkowsky had begun his career in AI as somebody who was warning against the danger of AI, here's what he ended up doing. In 2005, he was introduced to a name almost everybody knows, if you know anything about what's happening in the world in politics, Peter Thiel, who is the co-founder of PayPal and Palantir. They were introduced at a dinner party in San Francisco. Thiel was like, oh, you are doing some really interesting work in AI. And he ends up funding him. Okay. So they create an annual conference called the Singularity Summit at Stanford University. Another early supporter of Yudkowsky's work in AI was Jeffrey Epstein. He gave $50,000 to him. The founders of this lab called DeepMind, they persuaded Thiel to fund their startup, which was purchased at Google. I mean, it just goes on and on and on. Elon Musk is involved. The point is, Yudkowsky helped to spawn this entire industry around AI and these huge, huge, obviously, hugely rich people to invest in it and create what we are in now, which is like an AI race to the end, right? So Ziz is calling Yudkowsky out in this email. And at that point, they're like, you know what? We're done. We're done with you. What's wrong is like, you are getting banned. All of you are banned. And that's when Zizians.info, that website, appears online and it's declaring Lasota a cult leader and calling them the Zizians. All right. Now Lasota and Danielson, Gwen Daniel, they're like in a really bad place. There were criminal cases filed against him for the trespassing, wearing a mask for an unlawful purpose, resisting arrest, all kinds of things related to the protest, right? So they have to defend against that. That costs money. They're having some housing issues. They have been banned by Airbnb, okay? But that's a whole other story. They can't do Airbnb. Like, they're going through some stuff. That suddenly, in April of 2020, Gwen Danielson's lawyer tells the court that my client has disappeared. I cannot get in touch with Gwen Danielson, and they might have killed themselves. So he's like, and then Lasota is also reported missing and presumed dead. Now, later it is discovered that neither one of them was dead, but they had kind of disappeared themselves to make it seem like because in August 19th of 2022, Ziz Lasota taken her younger sister, Naomi, and Borhanian, who is one of the other four trans women at the protest, on a boat. And apparently, according to them, as they were heading back to the marina that night, Lasota had fallen off the back of the boat in the bay, and oh no, she's dead. So now the family members of Lasota and Gwen are both like, they're having them declared dead. They're like, they've got obituaries in their hometown newspapers. It just goes on and on. However, what happens, and their lawyers have told, both of their lawyers have told the courts, our clients are gone, they're dead, they're deceased, they've disappeared. However, what happens is this: when they were going through all this housing crisis, they ended up living on the land of this guy named, there's so many names involved here, but I'll call him, like, the last name is Lind, and I can't, Curtis Lind, excuse me. Curtis Lind is important to the story too. And Curtis Lind, this is, again, COVID had begun, and this is in California. And at some point, California put in a moratorium on evictions and rent payments and stuff like that. So the Zizians, I'm just going to call them Zizians, even though they didn't call themselves that, they all lived on his land, but they had stopped paying rent. He goes to court. Lynn goes to court in the fall of 2022. He doesn't realize that these people have been declared dead. Two of them have been declared dead. And he files a case against them for their, like, the back rent. Now, Lind, apparently 2.5 weeks after he files this lawsuit, is approached by somebody else who's connected to this group or part of this group, a friend of Ziz's. And that person says that my trailer has a leak and they don't know how to turn the water off. So Curtis Lind is bending over outside the trailer trying to get the water fixed. And suddenly he is hit in the back of the head. Okay. When he stands up there, the person who called him to the trailer is standing there, but also Borhanian and Letham, which were the other two trans women at that protest, were there. Lind had a gun. Curtis Lind, the landlord, had a gun on him. He shoots Borhanian. Borhanian dies. Okay. Then he also fires several rounds at one of the other people who attacked him, and he runs out of ammunition. And then he's attacked again. He survives the attack, but he is attacked so viciously that he said that the back of his, it felt like they were trying to cut his head off. There was also a sword that they brought to this attack, and a samurai sword was still sticking in his chest when he banged on the door of another tenant's RV and said, I'm dying. All right. Well, Letham and Dow, those two were arrested, obviously. One was, Borhanian was killed by the victim, Lind, but under California law, felony murder, right? Like, they're also charged with Borhanian's murder. Okay, we're not done yet.
Jeez.
A few days after Lind has been stabbed, Ziz's former lawyer gets an email from a DA in Sonoma County saying, by the way, your client is still alive. And Lasota was on the scene because when they were trying to find these other folks, they found Lasota. When they were hunting the folks who had attacked Lynn, they found Ziz, okay? And Ziz is alive and well. Remember, Liz had thrown herself off the back of this boat,
right,
trying to appear dead. Here's what happens with Liz. They get, Ziz is handcuffed at gunpoint, taken to the Vallejo Police Headquarters, where she fakes a medical emergency, is taken to a hospital, and then disappears from the hospital. Okay? Then 2 months later, oh God, there's another murder that takes place of a couple all the way in Philadelphia. We're on the other side of the country, of a couple named Rita and Richard Zajko. And they are the parents of one of the young rationalists who is friends with Ziz. And that rationalist's name is Jamie Zajko. Okay. The couple, his parents were shot in their home 2 weeks earlier on their child's 30th birthday. The belief is that Jamie killed his parents. Now they're looking for Jamie. They find him at this hotel. When they get into the hotel, guess who's at the hotel? It's Ziz. Ziz is there, along with another person, Daniel Blank. Daniel Blank is also a member of this group. Daniel Blank was at the protest, but not actively involved. He was just kind of somebody who was observing. So in this hotel room, they find Ziz. They find Daniel Blank, except this is what Ziz does, because Ziz is very good at faking a medical emergency. Ziz pretends to be passed out on the bathroom floor, completely unresponsive. I want you to look up Ziz's mugshot from this incident. Ziz refused to open her eyes and stayed limp the entire time, pretending to just be out cold. So like six officers had to carry her out. Ziz is a very tall woman, carry her out. They had to hold her up and hold her face with her eyes closed to take the mugshot. It looks like they're taking the mugshot of a dead person. Ziz would not speak. Anyhow, so she is charged with all kinds of things, right? Disorderly conduct. Obviously, she absconded from before, hindering police. She's held on those charges in Pennsylvania for months, and but they set bail, and she makes bail, and she gets out again. All right. Okay. She gets on again, out again. We're like running out of time, but basically, what happens is then, oh boy, then in Vermont, okay. We're not in Vermont yet. There are Lasota and two other women. So she gets on a bail and she disappears. Obviously, she does not show up for her court hearings, right? So she's like disappeared again. She shows up again, apparently in, she was living with a couple other people in North Carolina, but then they're all in Vermont because they're looking to purchase some property. And she's with these two trans women, Teresa Youngblood and, a cis woman, Teresa Youngblood, and a German quant trader. Look, all this terminology, quant, there's so much quant, Bitcoin, AI, I don't even understand this world. But anyhow, a quant trader called Ophelia Buchholz, who are militant vegans, again, active in these communities. She's with them trying to buy some property in Vermont. They're pulled over by a border patrol agent for an immigration check. Now, close to the border, this is Vermont, so they are close to the Canadian border, and there it's much more routine to get pulled over for things like this. They get pulled over, and they get out and pull a gun on the federal agent. They open fire on the federal agents, and one Border Patrol officer, David Malland, was killed in the firefight, as was Ophelia Buchholz, who was in the car. So two people are then killed. Youngblood, who is the one who survived, was charged with the murders. And then all their guns, you know, were purchased by Zajko. Zajko was the Jamie Zajko who apparently killed his parents. All right. Curtis Lind, now back to California. The landlord who had been attacked was attacked one more time. And this time he was attacked fatally. He was stabbed in the chest by a man who was in a beanie and a mask. And it was a 22-year-old Oxford student named Maximilian Snyder. Again, these are all incredibly brilliant kids, but they're all involved in this community. And Maximilian Snyder was the fiance of Youngblood, who had killed the Border Patrol agent. Okay. All this happens. they still cannot get hold of Ziz, but they have traced the fact that Ziz had been living with Ophelia and Youngblood in North Carolina for a bit. 4 weeks go by. We are now in February of 2025, so about a year ago, and we are in Maryland. And in Maryland, the state police approach a pair of box trucks that are parked on an unpaved road near Frostburg, Maryland. And in one of the trucks, they found a young man dressed in all black, Daniel Blank. Daniel Blank was the person they found in the hotel room when they arrested Jamie for the murder of his parents and when Ziz was acting like she was passed out forever. But also in the back of the truck, they found Lasota, Ziz Lasota, the head of Zizians, and Jamie Zajko, who, again, Jamie Zajko obviously was a person of interest in his parents' murders, had also been taken for questioning, but apparently not charged, and they were out and about. Now, there's this whole web, like the trucks are registered to Youngblood, who had killed the agent up in Vermont. There's this whole web of all these people connected to this group, and most of them have now finally been arrested, and they are not wandering the streets anymore. So, Suri Dowell and Somni Latham, both trans women, were charged in the 2022 murder of Emma Borhanian and the attempted murder of the landlord Chris Lind. Again, Borhanian was killed by Lind when he was defending himself, but these women are also charged with her murder. They're scheduled to go to trial in California in March of 2026. Maximilian Snyder, who is the one who actually murdered Lind in a year ago, pleaded not guilty to it. He's scheduled to return to court in January of this month, basically. His partner, Teresa Youngblood, faces four federal charges in Vermont related to the murder of Border Patrol agent David Mayland. And the prosecutors are intending to pursue the death penalty there. She also pleaded not guilty. This summer, Gwen Danielson, remember Gwen was Ziz's original kind of like accomplice in all of this, going back, you know, all the way to 2006 or 16, appeared in Sonoma County in criminal court. And her charges are only related to that protest from all that years ago. Wow. But they've been reduced to misdemeanors. And apparently Gwen has kept herself kind of her nose clean since then. And then you've got the folks caught here in the box truck in the trucks in Maryland from last year. Lasota, Zajko, and Daniel Blank. They're in custody in Maryland on weapons, drugs, and trespassing charges. Their trial is going to start in February. And Lasota then faces several set of federal charges because she was in possession of guns as a fugitive in Pennsylvania. Anyhow, so she has a maximum sentence of 15 years in prison if convicted. She has also pleaded not guilty to all these charges. So all this stuff is everybody who's pleaded not guilty, they're all going to go to trial. These trials are going to be wild, given just the facts that are on record. Yeah. I got most of my source material from a very well-written, very long Rolling Stone article that you can find. And yeah, anyhow, so that's the story of the Zizians, which I think is one of the wildest things I've ever heard. And you can only... You just can't make it up.
No, because Kyle and I are just sitting here blinking as you go through all this information.
I'll say this, I have to dip out for an exam conference, but my one comment will be, if these are the most rational people in the world using pure rationality, can AI actually even really be worse? So that's my comment I'll leave today with. So,
you know what, Colin, that's the thing. I mean, like, you know what? I mean, given that these are the folks who are supposed to protect us from, like, you know, the AI apocalypse, I think we're just going to have to settle for the AI apocalypse. I got to say one last thing, Colin. I know you got to dip out, but I got to say one last thing. Daniel Zajko, who was Daniel Blank, who was one of the guys who was observing the protests, but, you know, remained connected to these people and is also under arrest. He was asked if he wanted to give any comments. He speaks to the reporter. He says to the reporter, "I only have one thing I want to say. I want to dictate a letter over the phone for Yudkowsky, the original founder of this, you know, less wrong." And the whole letter was just a plea for Yudkowsky to become vegan. I am fascinated with this overlap here. That was, I don't know, just the last weird fact I had to share about this case. All right, Colin, I know you got to dip out. Meethal and I are going to wrap this up. Meethal, anything you want to say about this? Or
I mean, besides just insanity, lots to say. Also, I want to know about this militarized veganism, because that's interesting. Like, what does that even mean?
Wait, you're a vegetarian or you're a vegan?
Vegetarian. There's no way I will ever get rid of dairy. Cheese can't is get rid life. Of dairy.
Maybe. Here's a theory. I want no vegans hating on me. That not eating all the things that non-vegans eat makes you really angry. I don't know. When I was, I always grew up thinking like skinny people are just angry because they're hungry. I think that's what it is. Anyhow, I just think it's the wildest story. And I cannot wait for the documentary because it's going to be incredible when it comes out. And the scripted show, because, you know, HBO is going to do it.
Of course.
And the trials are all around the corner for all of these people. And I also am waiting because I'm telling you, Ziz is going to make another grand escape.
Of course.
I am calling it right there's now. No, there's no wish. You Ziz can't keep her down.
Ziz is going to come and go multiple times. And
you can't keep Ziz down. That woman is something else.
That is a crazy story.
All right,
story.
Guys. It's a crazy story, yeah. All right, guys. Thank you so much for following along. And it was a rabbit hole honestly, Mithil, halfway through it, as I was taking notes, I was like, Rabia, don't do this. This is too much. But I was like, I'm in now. It's too late.
So there's no going back now.
No going back now. All right, guys. Well, we will see you online and next week for next week's episode of Undisclosed Unfiltered. Once again, reach out to us if you have any stories that you desperately want us to cover. And by the way, for these episodes, you know, we really want to stick to things that are kind of in the news right now and more contemporary, leaked questions about, like, you know, law or true crime stories. Not so much like, you know, we've gotten requests from folks saying, why don't you talk about the Ellen Greenberg case? Yeah, we love talking about like existing cases. But for the most part, unless there's some things happening right now, like, you know, contemporaneously, we're not going to be doing that on these episodes, but we could be doing those things for our regular weekly episodes until we hit our next season, which is not too far from now. All right. Okay, Mithil, thanks so much. You have a great weekend or
you
week
too.
And I will see you next week.
See ya.
Bye.
Bye.
Hey, Undisclosed listeners. Before I roll through the credits, I've got a few quick notes. By now, most of you probably know about our Facebook community group. If you haven't joined yet, please go to facebook.com/groups/towardjustice and answer 3 simple questions and you're in. But seriously, answer the questions because a bunch of you are still pending since you've only answered 1 or 2. They're easy questions, I promise. In addition to engaging with us through the Facebook group, you can also leave us a voice note at speakpipe.com/undisclosed. We always check the messages, and so far, I think we've answered all of them. We also have a Patreon page with 3 different tiers of perks, the lowest one just being $1, which allows us to continue to do this work. Other tiers include bonus episodes, early access to merch, and even joining Rabia in a live true crime Zoom discussion. Just go to patreon.com/undisclosedpod. Now, onto the real credits. A huge shout out to Hannah McCarthy for audio production. Thank you to Patrick Cortez and Ramiro Marquez for our theme music. For anyone new here, you can engage with us online by going to Instagram or Facebook at Undisclosed Podcast. We're also on TikTok, YouTube, and X at Undisclosed Pod. Whether you're a new or returning listener, you can always check out our previous cases and bonus episodes by going to our website at undisclosedpod.com. If you would like to follow Colin and Rabia on social media, you can find Rabia at RabiaSquared2 on Instagram and Colin at EvidenceProf on Instagram, X, and Blue Sky. Thank you all for your continued support and for supporting all of our sponsors. Until next time.